Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your host, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA
106.5 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Dollar Store Dave Rose Martino.
Oh, it's all the names.
Yeah. Well, we want you to
add some more.
Scary. You have to be scary today.
I do?
Yeah. We want you on the scary side.
You gotta
be, the mafia tough Rose. You know,
yeah.
You might be packing heat.
Packing heat.
But if you bought it at the dollar store, it's not very good heat.
No, it's bad heat.
Bad. Yeah, really. Really bad, bad, bad. But somebody, you know, someone's going to keep them in business. Thank God for you.
That's right. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. Okay, that's probably too much.
Yeah, that's a little too far.
That's a little too much.
But that's okay. You know, that's what we're all for. Hey, I saw now a woman. She won. She got into the Guinness World Records for having the longest mullet.
Oh, really? People still have mullets?
Yeah, I was going to say, this is
they come
crazy.
Back.
And they didn't tell me.
No.
But I couldn't grow one anyway. I mean, I'm, you know.
Not now, I couldn't.
Those days are pretty much past. Yeah. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, well, I wonder if I could go out and buy one.
Oh, like a wig.
Yeah, like a wig. But then they reckon. Maybe at the dollar store?
Yeah.
Where you get your movies.
Oh, look. Oh, look.
Yeah. Next time you're in, check it out for me. And, get, you know, maybe a blonde one, you know.
Mullets for $1.25.
Yeah, and make sure they're not sticky.
I'm not even ask why.
No, but I just, you don't ask why. No, so I'm, see, you're such a dirty mind. I was thinking someone maybe spilled some soda pop on it.
Exactly.
And you're thinking something.
I'm not.
Disgusting.
Yeah, my mind.
Your mind takes us in places that shouldn't be legal. Terrible behavior, you know.
Horrible. Horrible person.
And I have to check out this guy also on NPR sent me this. This guy built a... if you can picture this, one of those wheels that you have, your pet, I don't know, guinea pig or mouse run around in the cage.
Yeah, yeah.
But he built a human size.
Oh.
And he decided he was going to take this around the world on the ocean. Yeah. And they arrested him. But I'm just thinking.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. Like, what is this? Like, what's going on? Mental illness is just kind of going crazy right now.
Why is this illegal, though?
Well, I'm not saying, hey, freedom of whatever. Well, I don't know that it's illegal.
Yeah.
I think they were looking out for his safety.
Yeah.
Probably.
You know. Probably.
Probably bought all of his parts at the dollar store.
You know? Probably.
Put it together, you know.
Put it together, and yeah.
Well, now, and now let's get on to the serious stuff here. Now, today we are talking with a fantasy author who I call science fiction, but people yell at me when I do that. So, and he's written a series called The Soul Forged Universe, and he's got book three out, Windwalker, Highcliff, Guardians Epic Fantasy Series. So, Mr. Richard H. Stevens, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on. I listened to your conversation about mullets, and something I always aspired to have was a mullet, but I could never get one because my hair would not stay down. I actually had my hair professionally straightened three times, and whenever the wind blew it, it just went straight up. So now I have like a crew cut just so I don't have to worry about it. But I always wanted to look like Andy Gibb or Sean Cassidy, but it was never to be. So,
well, Sean Cassidy kind of had a feathered hair.
Look. Yeah, well, I wanted the feather, the mullet, anything like that. I wanted to look, you know, something cool. like the girls just dug back in the 80s, but it wasn't to be. So
no,
I took up writing instead.
You see, you could have been the next Sean Cassidy. You could have been Richard Cassidy. You could have been the third son.
Yeah, I didn't have hair for it. I couldn't do it. No.
You were made for dancing.
Story, not acting it. Yeah.
Could you imagine? That would have been fun. Well, so how do you get into this world? Like, I understand this. You've built this universe, this Soul Forge universe, and you've put characters in and all that, and you've developed this whole scenario and all these things happen. And so how do you sit down and create this world, like, and create the rules and what, how the world works?
Yeah, so fantasy is so many ways you can write fantasy. A lot of people spend years developing magic systems and building worlds and stuff like that. I can't be bothered. I'm too lazy to do that. So what I do is I take a character, I figure out what he is, what his problem is, and then I just open up the front door and I give him a kick in the backside, and we discover the world together. And as he starts stumbling his way through life, I start writing it down, and it's almost like I'm at the theater watching a movie through his eyes, and I write down what I see. So in the very first book, Soul Forge, I kicked him out the front door. He walked through this overgrown front yard, through this broken gate into the forest, and that was my world at that time. I didn't know what else was in that world. He walked through the forest, and he turned north along a path that I decided I'm going to name it Redfire Path. So now my character's in a forest on Redfire Path, and that's my world. So he comes out of the forest, he's in a field, and he's looking at these distant mountains, and that was my world at that time. So I just keep going on building my world step by step as my characters see it. At some point, to make it realistic, even though it's fantasy, once he reaches another city, then now I have to figure out it took him so long to get to that city. I need to write that down because in future books, if someone else is walking that distance, they've got to arrive at that city around the same amount of time. So there is some realism in fantasy as well. And at that point, I'll start drawing a map, and then the map will start evolving as my characters go. And after 14 books, I've got five really developed maps. And I use Excel spreadsheets to keep track of my characters and their mannerisms and clothing and stuff like that. So I've had a case where, you know, characters got blue eyes in an early chapter in the book, but they're just a minor character, so, you know, I don't think much of them. The main character crosses them later on in the book, and all of a sudden they have a different color eyes, and my beta readers and my editors will pick that out. And thank goodness they do. So at that point, I decided, okay, I need Excel spreadsheet so I can have a tab open every time I'm writing about Alan Warren, and I can describe his nice mullet, and then I can describe Dave coming out of the dollar store. And
yep.
So so the map will show the dollar store that Dave's at, and
and he's in his Pinto.
So I don't put a lot of thought into my worlds at first, but they evolve as my story evolves.
Well, epic fantasy, how would you define it, and how would you say that it differs from other types of fantasy and science fiction? We're trying to teach Al the difference between the various types of fantasy and science fiction.
Yeah, you know what? That's a gray area. My take on epic and high fantasy is they're pretty close. I consider Game of Thrones more high fantasy because it's a battle between houses, a battle between ruling factions, between castles and stuff like that. Where epic fantasy is a little bit more like Lord of the Rings, where, you know, you still have the castles and the ruling houses, but that's not the main storyline. The main storyline is these epic quests that they go across these amazing lands. And I know they do that also. So there's a crossover between epic and high fantasy, but both those genres take place in the writer's world, not in our real world. And so, you know, there's other kinds of fantasy, paranormal fantasy and stuff like that. They'll take place in our world. And there's not a lot of world building there other than, you know, they might have a fictitious town, but it's, I think that's what separates epic and high fantasy from every other fantasy, is that it takes place in its own worlds. Lord of the Rings is in Middle Earth. Soulforge universe is on the different lands that I have. So right. That's
high fantasy, you do pot, you get stoned.
Yeah. So the political, I think, is more high fantasy, and the quest-driven fantasy where they go across lands, I think, is more epic. So that's how I see the difference.
Well, and you, in my opinion, you obviously start with your character, or your character and you, as you say, are kind of discovering the world. So the character's got to be the key point of the story. And also, you know, people also follow that. If you think about it, you know, characters are what will drive people, and they'll follow your series and that character for, it could be 100 years. Like I was talking about that, like Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. People still rewrite. People still go to England looking for his house. Like they act like it's a real person. So your character is the key. So who is your main character? And I mean that as in, like, how do you create this character?
My main character in the original book was just someone I envisioned as being this, very benevolent person when he was young. Like, he literally saw the good in everything. So you could go up and you could, you know, pretty well punch him in the face and he would apologize for being in your fist way. He was just a good guy who saw the best in everything. And
sounds Canadian.
Yeah, he apologized for everything, for sure. But so when you actually meet him in Soulforge, he's no longer a young man. He's now 45. And now, to me, that's young. But when I was writing it, that wasn't young. And when you meet him, he's a bitter, cantankerous lech. He's an alcoholic. He wants nothing to do with the world, and he just hates everybody. And the story is about, you know, the backstory is about what turned him into that type of person, because he literally saw the good in everything when he was younger. And life conspired to just beat him down to the point that he didn't care anymore. And that original story started where the kingdom needed him to come out of retirement and save them from the sorcerer that was devastating the land. And they couldn't find him because he had become a recluse. While he was out saving the kingdom when he was young, he came home to find his family slaughtered. So while he was saving them, no one looked after his family, and that turned him against them. But anyway, an old man, a messenger for the Chamber of the Wise, finds him, convinces him that the kingdom and the people's needs is greater than his own loathing of them, and he convinces him to come out of retirement to try and deal with a sorcerer that no one else can deal with. And so the story turned out to be, it turned into Soulfords. It was called originally The River Styx, but when someone said they loved Greek mythology, oh my God, there's not Greek mythology in my book. I just love the name of the river, so I changed it. And it became Soulforge, and it's all about him trying to reclaim his soul because he used to be this very benevolent person. But 3 books came out of that. There was never supposed to be a dragon in my books, and in book 3, a dragon showed up. And when that happened, it opened up my whole universe. So I write my books in trilogies, and I was only ever going to write that original trilogy, but when the dragon showed up, like I say, I've gone back in time now to explain why there's no mention of dragons in the first couple books. And then when I was writing that series, an elf comes into my story, and I was never going to write about elves, but she showed up anyway, and she talked about her 700-year-old elf queen. And as soon as I wrote that line, I thought, oh, I got to stop what I'm doing now and start writing the High Cliff Guardian series. But then I thought, no, I don't want a George R. Martin, my fans. And it's a shame that George has now become a verb, but I wouldn't do that to my fans. So I finished that trilogy, and now I've gone back in time to write the High Cliff Guardian. So every one of my trilogies has its own main character, and all my trilogies stand on their own. So you can pick up any trilogy of my universe and read it from book 1 to book 3. And once you're done the 3rd book, you never have to read me again, and you'll be happy you read a story.
Right. But these characters, what's your relationship with them? And this can take many aspects because, so, you know, when you write a series and it's over, so to speak, or you're finished with it, what happens to that character?
They either become a historical figure, or I will write further about them in a different series. So the High Cliff Guardian is all about the rise of the Elf Queen. Her name is Odaling Wise. In book 1, she's a spoiled princess, but she... She becomes this great elven queen. But when the High Cliff Guardians is over, that story is done, but that doesn't mean that's the end of Odaling. There's another series that will connect the High Cliff Guardians to my Legends of the Lurker series, which just takes place 700 years later, where the the queen is originally mentioned. So I will link them together. And some of, you know, dragons and elves and dwarves, they live longer than people. They will sometimes make it into other series as well. The Legend of the Lurker series is about a female, just a woman, and she's, because she's human, she doesn't live that long. So Rika's story starts in book one in Rika's Flight, and it ends in book three, Rika's Legacy. And you'll never hear about Rika again, other than 500 years down the road in the Soulforge Saga, someone might mention the old Hill Witch. So she becomes a historical figure. You won't meet that character again, but you'll get references to her. So as you go along, there's certain little things that will tie everything together.
Well, you mentioned dragons and elves and dwarfs. Where do these mythological creatures come from? Do you stay with the standard mythology, or do you deviate, and how do you decide?
Dragons, I've got a series I'm going to be writing, my original series. I was supposed to write that in 2020, and I had a research trip planned to the British Isles to visit Merlin's cave and King Arthur's castle and the Stonehenge and all that other stuff. And my world originally starts in 15th, 16th century England and Scotland, and it'll transport into my fictitious world. And I'm not going to spoil the story, but something happens that brings a dragon seed into the world. And from that point on, the dragons are born. As far as elves and dwarves, they already live there, so I don't have to actually create them. But I do create other, I've got the Voil. They appear in the Soulforge Saga. When I originally started writing in 1982, I remember thinking to myself, that as soon as I thought of the story, thinking, I'm never going to write about elves, dwarves, or dragons, because everyone else does, and I don't want to be that guy. 36 years later, and when I was writing Into the Madness, and the dragons showed up, all of a sudden, oh, God, I got to explain to my readers why, you know, there's no mention of dragons. So I went back and did the Rika's Flight series, and I started writing about dragons. And then an elf worked her way into the story, and next thing you know, that's all I write about is elves, dwarves, and dragons, and I absolutely love it. I'm that guy now, but I remember when I was 17 years old, I'm thinking, I'm not going to be that guy, but here I am. I'm that guy.
You turned into that guy.
I enjoy it. I don't do it because I'm trying to write to market. I know if you're into the literature world, they say if you want to make it big, you got to write to market. I want to write what I want to write, and it just so happens that the dragons force its way into my books, and now that's what I love doing, but yeah, it was just a fluke, really.
How do you create the personality of these, non-humans?
The non-humans, I actually wrote in Highcliffe Guardians, I wanted to write about something different because I had now elves and dwarves and dragons. I'm thinking, what can I challenge myself with now? And I played D&D with my kids and stuff like that. We did that online during COVID. And I thought, I want to write about a goblin. And already Salvatore writes about goblins and stuff like that all the time. And if you play D&D, you know, goblins are these pesky little creatures that you level up on. When you're a low-level character, too, you'll get experience points and advance your own character. But I think I want to make my goblin different. So I made him the High Wizard of the Elves. And of course, the elves being very highbrow and uppity, they're not happy about this goblin being their High Wizard. But I wanted to challenge myself and give this goblin some substance and some character. So you will not level up on this goblin. He'll be leveling up on you. And so I try to make my characters eclectic, make them have something that will stand out in your mind that you remember. Oh, yeah, I remember Elfin. He's the goblin with High Wizard. And he's a crusty old thing who's always berating his apprentice. And you wonder why his apprentice just doesn't throw his staff up in the air and just walk away from him because he's just always getting scolded. But back, you know, deep down, people can see that the High Wizard Goblin actually cares about everything. He's just this snarky thing that it's almost like he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders, and he likes to let everyone know that he's not impressed.
That's how I feel.
Yeah. I definitely have days like that, too. So he's probably part of me as well. All my characters are probably part of me somehow.
And how do you write the evil character? How do you get into the mindset and be able to write characters that are trying to hurt others or kill others or do bad things?
Yeah, in Soulforge Saga, my original series, in book one, he's just mentioned. You don't really see him until the very end. And as I was writing my subsequent books, I'm thinking, I want to actually give the evil character some meaning to the reader. So, you know, none of us are inherently born evil. We're all born just as this lump of useless flesh that someone has to tend for a couple of years until we can start, you know, struggling our way through the world and we grow up. And things that happen to us in the world will, you know, kind of change who we are. They'll make who we are, whatever. So now I'm starting to make my character, my evil characters, real to life. So he's Alan Warren as a young man. He's a, he's a nice guy, but all of a sudden something happens. He trips and bangs his head or something, and then he's mad at the guy who tripped him, and they get in a fist fight. Next thing you know, he's facing charges, and then there's certain things in life that just start taking Alan Warren down the wrong path, and then he's at a party and he makes a bad decision and takes the wrong kind of drug that gets him addicted to it, and away he goes. But Alan wasn't a bad guy to begin with, but life has reared its ugly head and has taken him one way. And where Dave, he's the good guy, and he's had the fortitude to fight through these things, and he's had the ability to, or the good fortune to not make that bad decision. And I think that's the only thing that really separates all of us from being on one side of the bar as the other. Like, you talk when I don't know if I was on air or not, but I used to be at the police service. And when I was a teenager, I was very, very, very close to being on the other side of the law. And I actually had a child when I was 17, and I think he straightened me right out. So he actually kept me from being on the wrong side of the law enforcement because I had to take care of him. So, yeah, that's what my life is.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Except for I'm not the evil one. I'm the nice guy.
Yeah, well, I was just trying to flip it so you guys can see each other. So,
I'm the good guy.
We know Dave's the bad one.
Right? Dave's terrible. Absolutely. He sits in a Pinto outside of a store waiting.
Well, he's got a hyphen in his name, so that.
It's fantasy, though. It's the ye old dollar store that I hung out at.
crazy stuff. Well, I think it's important. You got to show. Just because they're doing bad things, people have got to understand why they think what they're doing is wrong, is right. Because quite often the bad guy is in a different world in their mind, and so they think what they're doing is the correct thing.
Oh, absolutely. He's not thinking he's evil, for sure. So I try to build empathy for the bad guy now that I've, I was progressing as a writer. So like in my original series, you don't hear a lot about the bad guy, but as my next series started going, I started to give some feelings, and the bad guy has feelings too. Like, just because he's a bad guy doesn't mean he doesn't hurt, doesn't mean he doesn't cry, doesn't mean he isn't affected by life as well. It's the same as you and I. But so it's nice to see if you can get the reader to empathize a little bit of the bad guy. Obviously you don't appreciate what he's actually doing to the rest of the land, but
naughty girls need love too.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Darth Vader, how many people love Darth Vader?
Well, yeah. Well, they, it's the whole person. If you get to know the whole person,
exactly. And that.
So how do you write your characters in the sense of in your mind? Like, are you sitting there and do you have conversations with these characters, or do you see them and listen to them and copy it down, or is there another way? That's kind of like the typical ways people say writers say that's how they do their characters. What's your experience?
Yeah, no, I don't actually sit there and plot out the character himself. My character will develop themselves as I start writing about them. And then I'll introduce something about Sidira. Like, Sidira's an archer. All of a sudden, she's a left-handed archer. So I got to make sure I write that in a spreadsheet. So, 2 books later, she's drawn from left-hand draw. But I will make her cheeky or something like that and just give her something different from everyone else. And then she becomes this fun-loving, cheeky archer who is very good with a bow. And then the next thing, she's in a confrontation, and you discover, wow, she's got a lot of attitude. So as much fun as she is around a campfire when you're just sitting around telling tales, if you piss her off, you better take off because she's one person you'd want to upset. So when I write the characters, I try to give them something different that stands them out amongst the other people that they're around. So, someone might be a little quiet. Someone might be very boisterous. Someone might be grumpy. Someone might be cheeky like Sidira. So that way they kind of stand out in your mind as you're reading about the characters. And, you'll love Sidira because she's cheeky. You'll love Rook Bowman because he's a leader and he doesn't say much, but he leads by his actions. And you'll love Salarian just because he is, like I say, he used to be this very benevolent person and he's always trying to do good, even if it's he won't lie. So even if he tells the truth and that gets him in more trouble, that's just the character he is. He won't lie to keep himself out of trouble. So all my characters are hopefully, the main characters have their own mannerisms, and hopefully that the reader will enjoy reading them.
Well, how do you create dialogue? Some writers say that they read their dialogue out loud so that it sounds right to their ear. Mm-hmm. Some study movie dialogue, and some say their characters, you know, speak to them and they just transcribe it. How does it work for you?
Yeah, I would say all of the above. There's when I edit many different ways. I edit on screen, I edit on paper, and I edit out loud. I do these live Facebook reads generally on a Thursday night. And it's amazing that you're going to write this beautiful prose or this beautiful sentence that this dwarf speaks out loud to the queen. And then you read it out loud and it, Jesus, sounds so corny. Like, you know, people are not going to speak like that. But when you're actually reading it on paper or on the screen, that's brilliant. But when you say it out loud, you're no, I got to change that. So through the editing process, I think a lot of the dialogue will change. One thing I do with my dialogue, especially with my dwarfs, is I eliminate G's on the end of a like an ing word. I take the O out of the word too. And the
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I thought of the word of, so when they're speaking, I write the way I hear them speak in my head. And people said, don't do that. Just write them and tell people that they have an accent. But I want you to read them the way I hear them talking. And I don't know whether that's a detriment to my stories or not, but that's who I am as an author. So I say, you know, these are my books. That's the way I'm writing them. And if you don't like it, well, you don't have to read me. But so my dwarves have their own language. So they kind of bastardized the English language. And my half giant, I got a half giant in the Soulforge Sag. He's a great big dullard, but he comes across as this big dummy. And he's stronger than an ox, but it doesn't seem too bright. But at the end of the day, when you get through all three books, you realize he's probably smarter than everyone else in that story, just because he's just commonsensical smart. He's not book smart. He just does the right thing all the time, and he says the right thing, even though it's simple. So that's another special way to make your characters.
Your violence on the page, are you conscious of it? Do you think about how you write, you know, violent acts or violent happenings when you do your writing?
Yeah, people ask me about, is my book age appropriate for certain ages? And I was Sword of Snarl was the first fantasy book I ever read in 1980. It was the Terry Brooks. And, there's probably been better fantasy books written since then or even before then, but it'll always be my favorite because it was my gateway into fantasy. I think it's a brilliant book. It instilled the magic of fantasy in me. And Terry, it's fantasy. You're going to have death. Terry doesn't go on like Terry Brooks doesn't go on like Terry Goodkind. I love Terry Goodkind, too. We lost him the other year, but He kind of exonerates the violence know, if you're having this Richard Rawl, when he has a fight, his sword cuts him open and his intestines fall out and it goes about all the gore. I don't do that. You know, we have a sword fight. One guy dies, he gets impaled by a sword. That's as far as I would go with that. And I don't write mine like George R. R. Martin either, so I don't have the hound dropping the F-bomb every time you see him. So I write them for people of all ages. And with that in mind, I don't exonerate the gore, and I don't take the language too, and don't make it smutty, and I don't write like Sarah Maas, so I don't put sex in there. And, you know, people have relationships, but I close the door, because if I wrote it, I think it would sound really cheesy. You can envision what they're doing behind that door a lot better than I could ever write it. So I just want to write about the fantasy itself, and not that kind of fantasy, the actual epic fantasy. So, yeah, so, you know, I know my strength, and I know my weakness, and that would definitely be a weakness for me if I tried to put some spice in my books. I'd probably sell more if I did that, but that's not what I like doing. So I keep...
No, if you don't like doing it, then, yeah, if you don't like doing it, then don't. I mean, you'd be surprised, but a lot of times it's just being self-conscious, but you might be able to write better in that area than you think you can. It's just... But if it doesn't fit what you're doing, you don't like it, then...
Yeah, that's not what my story's about. And, you know, I know people will blend it in there, and that's fine if that's what you want to do. But to me, if I was to read a book like that, I would put it down. Because not because I'm a prude or whatever. I like that kind of stuff as much as the next person. But that's not what I'm reading fantasy for. If I want to read that kind of book, I'll go read that genre, not fantasy. And it's neat that they blend it, so you get the mix of both. But, you know, that's not what I want to read. I want to read the epic fantasy. So I read fantasy. I want to read about dragons, elves, and dwarfs. I want to read about the Lord of the Rings or the Sword of Shannara or something like that.
I agree. Actually, I'm that way too. Yeah, I agree totally. You know, now the big picture, when you're writing these series and you're going through with your characters and stuff, and it might happen organically or it might be something you think about, but is there a theme or a big picture or some sort of topic or something you want the reader to get out of the book or the series? And like I said, even if it happens organically.
Yeah, it will definitely happen organically. I don't purposely set out to put any kind of morals into my stories. I try to make them realistic, even though it's from a fantasy point of view. So, you know, like I say, we're talking about the empathy for the bad guy earlier. Prejudice, all these different things that we encounter in our everyday life, I try to make all that stuff part of my books. I'm not trying to harp on prejudice there, but I'm just saying all these different themes that we have that we deal with on a daily basis, you know, I just put them in a fantasy world. So all my characters are going through these things as well. I have a little novella called The Royal Tournament. And when I started writing it, it was just a fun story about this guy who wants to partake in the Royal Tournament. Like he likes to joust, but he can't because he has to help his father bring in the crop whenever they have the Royal Tournament. But this year it's happening in his hometown, so he can actually do both. And then he befriends this black person, and this black person is ostracized by most of the contestants in there. And he's heard different things. He's never dealt with black people before. And he's, you know, he hears the rumors about them, and he's thinking, oh, but all of a sudden he gets to know this guy, and he realizes that, you know, the skin color means nothing. And, you know, Alcyon, who is the black person, is... there's no difference. And he discovers this. And so the reader sees this through his eyes, and it just shows and I didn't mean to go that way, but that's the way that story went. So he's trying to help out Alcyon deal with these short-minded or closed-minded people who are, for some reason, society's ingrained this in their head that this color skin is not as good as that color skin. So, you know, that does come into even fantasy stories as well. And so that's how that story ended up. And it certainly wasn't meant when I first started doing that. But like I said, I just try to write about things that happen in everyday life. And we all encounter prejudice and everything else as we go through life. It doesn't have to be black. It could be Mexican. It could be Chinese. It could be Islam, whatever. And it's very, you know, we're an ugly world as far as the way we deal with people. Like, at the end of the day, we're people. And I try to put that in my books. The same with elves. So the elves and people. So I try to play on that, where people with the round top ears, they're called round tops, and they got pointy ears. And, you know, they look at each other strange just because their ears are different. Like, how does that make the person different inside? It doesn't. And it's just how shallow we can be as people at some time.
Yeah, people laugh at me because I got a mullet. I don't understand it. I'm not that bad.
They would laugh at me if I tried to grow one, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, because mine's a wig from the dollar store.
That's right. Ye old dollar store.
The old dollar store. A dollar would mean a lot back then.
Yes.
When you look at all the work you've done, you've written quite a few books here and a few series and all this stuff like this. But, for instance, you finish Windwalker, and it's book three, get it in there, it's all done, it comes out and stuff like that, and you're going to start doing the next book. But when you stop at that moment, and if you were to look at yourself and kind of what you've accomplished, and you've kind of looked at where you started from and what you're doing now, how do you think each book itself, and like the last one you did, how do you think it's changed you, and how does it change you as you go through this series of writing?
Yeah, I don't know if it changes me per se. People always ask me, what's my best book? And I say, it's the one on the computer that's not sitting on the table in front of you. I, as an author, I work with a professional editor, and I work with other people who are more professional than I am, and they help me refine my craft. So Soulforge, which sat in my head for 35 years as I worked on it, will always be my book, baby. It will always be the most special book to me in the world. So if you had to ask me what's my favorite book, it's Soulforge. Is it my best written book? Absolutely not. So the funny thing about that is it's the first book in my last series of my universe. So my universe is finished. I've got about another 20 books in my head that I want to write to do this, to tie my whole universe together. And I can just see in 10, 15 years down the road, people are going to on board with book one in my universe, and they're going to read along, and hopefully they're going to love it, and they're going to get all the way to that last trilogy, and they're going to hit Soulforge and go, what the heck happened to that guy? Like, did he just suddenly lose his craft? But and it's not. It's because Soulforge is the first book I wrote. Hopefully Wizard of the North, which is its sequel, is a little bit better because I learn as an author. And hopefully Into the Madness, which is the last book in that trilogy, is a bit better than Wizard of the North. And every book that I write will hopefully be just a little bit tighter, a little bit more well-written, because, you know, I'm starting to adopt stuff that my editors are telling me that, you know, take away some of the LY words. I don't believe in taking them all out, but, you know, just tightening the story itself, getting rid of the fluff, and your descriptors become more precise, and hopefully I'm not long-winded, and blah, blah, blah. But so I think I get better with every book I write by a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes the stories or what the characters go through, in a way, you live it, and sometimes that changes you in a sense. That's kind of why I asked that question.
Oh, yeah. I write fantasy, so, And I'm almost, you know, I'm getting closer to 60 than 50, so I'm kind of set in my ways. So as far as me changing, I'm an old dog. So.
And you know, in 20 years when they're reading, they'll go, who's this old guy?
Yeah. I think you're thinking that now, but yeah.
No, you're at the daddy age. That's the popular.
Oh, I'm well past the daddy age. So.
Yeah.
My wife has nice black hair, and we walk down the street, and I always think that, you know, they're going to say, oh, isn't that kind of odd? The father and daughter are holding hands at that age.
Well, I always say, isn't that nice? See, who says young people are bad? Look at that young girl walking that old man.
Yeah. She's making sure he doesn't trip and hurt himself.
Helping him find his way home. What a sweet girl.
That's right.
Young people are.
Well, hopefully they see it that way.
Yeah, well, that's what I always say, whether it's true or not. I'm taking the upper road there, you know. So how long does it take you to do one of these books?
If the books are 350 to 400 pages, I was getting to the point, because I left my job in the police service because it was too stressful, and my wife started supporting us on her own through an online business that she runs, and so I could write full time, and I was writing about three a year. And the nice thing about being independently published is I don't have the whatever that the big publishers do. Like Stephen King writes a book, it doesn't come out for 2 years because they got to do whatever they got to do to hype it up. And if he wants to write two in 1 year, they say no, because one will be, you know, lost in the other one and all blah, blah, blah. I don't need to worry about that. I'm a professional editor, professional cover designer, so I do everything properly. But as soon as I get it done, I upload it to Amazon, I take it to my printer, and which is in Toronto and Toronto, Canada, and I'm selling my book the next day. So that's one of the joys of being an independently published author. That's one of the few joys of being an independently published author. If Penguin offered $500,000 to look after my stuff, I would gratefully say, there you go. But I'm not going to be picked up by a small publisher because I don't want to lose my rights.
And you like doing shows and all that. It seems like you're on there every time I'm on social media, you're at another show.
Yeah, I'll be at the Royal Medieval Fair this weekend. It's one of my bigger shows. So to answer your question before, these books I'm writing now, The Hype of Guardians, they're 600 pages to 700 pages, and it's taken me a good year. The one I'm writing now, When Legends Rise, is not even going to be that long, but it's taken me even longer because my wife had her hours cut, and I decided, you know what, I better go out and get a part-time job. So I work in the morning now and outside of the house again, and I make more in one of these shows than I do 5 weeks of working. So these shows are amazing for me, but they don't happen every week. If I could do a show a week, I would never have to work again. But, you know, these shows are kind of sporadic. They happen once, like this fair will happen once a year. I'll do one in Fergus. It happens once a year. So I get about six of these shows in a year, but it'd be nice if they happen every week, but they don't. So now I'm doing about one book a year now.
Now, it's quite a group, like these, when you go to the medieval things, they're it's a real loyal group, isn't it?
It's quite following. It's really cool. Same with Comic-Cons. And I don't do as well at Comic-Cons. It's kind of hit and miss. You never know who you're going to, you know, what kind of crowd you're going to have that day. People at Comic-Cons are looking for images and manga and bobbleheads and whatever. But, you know, but there's enough people that will buy my books at a Comic-Con. But the neat thing about them is these are... We were talking about eclectic people, and I don't say they're eclectic, but they're different. They're nerdy. They're introverts. They don't like going out in the world too often, just because I don't know if they feel different. I'm not sure why, but I love going to the Comic Cons because you've got these people are so shy and introverted and everything else. They're out there and they're having a great time because they're with their crowd, and it's really neat to see them flourish. You know, they dressed up in all these outlandish costumes that are amazing. Like their effort they put into them is incredible. And so I will dress up too. I put a knight's costume on. I'm a wallflower. Like, I'm very introverted myself too. I would never have done this unless I became a writer, and I only do this to try and sell books. But I dress up as a knight now, and it's when I'm selling books at a medieval fair, and people love that. They want to take their picture with me because I'm dressed up as a knight, and you know, here's the knight, the author. I think it's really cool that I participate in that as well. But So I love doing these events, just obviously to sell books and get new readers, but I love seeing the people that generally don't do well in society for the most part, but all of a sudden here's their genre, here's, you know, they're with their crowd and they're just love life, and it's so cool to see them come out of their shell.
Yeah, I think you were dressed up like, wasn't it Sheena or?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Sometimes like Linda Carter when I do the Comic Cons, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that must be fun. Okay, so listen, people finding you, where do you like to be found besides these events, social media, website? What have you got going on?
Yeah, I've got a website. It's www.richardhstevens.com, and Stevens is spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S. The H is in there, to try and differentiate me from the 100,000 other Richard Stevens in the world. There's probably even more, but... But the H in there, that makes it a little bit more search engine optimal. When you're Googling me, if you Google Richard H. Stevens fantasy author, I should be the one that comes up now, which is really cool. You can contact me through there. I'm on Instagram, and I'm on, well, it's not Twitter anymore. Is it X or Z or whatever that freaking thing is? But I don't enjoy that. My wife looks after that stuff for me. The only thing I enjoy doing is Facebook, because I can talk to you. If you want to talk to me on Facebook, you send me a message through Messenger, and you and I can have a conversation really quick. It's just almost like texting each other on a phone, and I'd rather talk to my fans that way. So I always encourage them to reach out to me, talk to me, send me an email, do whatever. My email is RichardHStevens1, because Richard H. Stevens was taken, RichardHStevens1@gmail.com. If people want to reach out to me, I encourage that. And I also encourage people that live close to me to email me. If you want to buy a book from me, I invite you to my house. You know, I don't have to worry about paparazzi because I'm not famous, so I don't have people stalking me. But I've got a 2,500 book library, and I invite people to come in and see my library. And I actually built a secret library, so I've got this one panel, one bookshelf that actually moves aside, and I keep all my original manuscripts in the secret room. and I ask them to try and find which bookshelf moves. So it's kind of a fun way to engage with my readers. You know, I don't have as many readers as Stephen King, so you know, I don't have to worry about people lining up about the block and you know, making my life less enjoyable. Like, I would think it'd be really cool if actually someone did stand outside of my house and take a picture, because I, you know, then maybe you know you got it. And speaking of that, I said to my wife, I will know I've made it as an author if we ever find my books in a secondhand store. And you know, that seems kind of funny, because you think of a secondhand store, maybe they got rid of your books because they didn't like them. But my wife went into a store the other day, and well, probably a few months ago, and she found my Rika Spike trilogy in there.
Well, there you go. That was me. Sorry.
It was so cool to see you in there. Actually, you know, because you're in there with like Terry Brooks and R.A. Salvatore, they all have their books in there. It doesn't mean that people didn't like them, but whatever's happened in life, the books have been donated, and my books were actually donated to a thrift store, which is really cool. So
yeah, well, you know, and I spend my time driving around to the shopping malls dropping my books off in the bathrooms. You know, you do what you have to.
Well,
you know?
I go on cruises and stuff like that. You know, we travel the world all the time, and I always forget to bring my books. And we were on a cruise ship in the Mediterranean, in the Caribbean, and they had a library there, and I'm thinking, I should have brought one of my books and stuck it in their library. How cool would that be? People going down the Caribbean, right. And there's Richard A. Stevens on the bookshelf.
That's right. Leave it everywhere you can.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's all I do. You know, I leave it everywhere. You know, doesn't always end up in a good place.
No, no.
But listen, so we're going to have everything up on our website too, so people can find it with one click. No problems there, and it's all good. You know, I actually have to put an R in my name too, because there's that Alan Warren and back where you are in your area, and he's a foot doctor and he writes books. So,
oh, yeah.
Got to keep us separate, right? Yeah, I don't want to start reading about feet.
It's a small world. I need to have a police check done, and this is before like a lot of the internet was mainstream. And I remember sitting on the other side of the counter, and the officer would type away, and then he'd look up at me with a frown, and then he'd type away, and he'd look up at me with a frown. He did that 7 times. There were 7 Richard H. Stevens in Canada, and 3 of them are shady. So, he's making sure I wasn't one of the shady ones.
Well, he made that mistake.
Yes, yeah, this is before I joined the police force. So yeah, that's right. So I fooled him. Absolutely.
Yeah, fooled him. Fooled your way all the way there. Yeah. So you're still doing that lurking podcast and dressing up like
people? Yeah, we just did one on Tuesday, and we actually did a reading from Wizard of the North. So David Kelly, who's a science fiction author, he actually dressed up like Al Hina, and he did an amazing job, because Al Hina is a tough character to dress up as. He's got pupilless eyes, and he's got a long white beard, and David looks more like you, Alan. He's a little shorter of hair on the top, and yeah.
What are you trying to say? Well, no, that's good. It's a fun show. I think it's great. It's very original, and I give it 2 thumbs up.
Oh, that's awesome. Anyway. If anyone wants to come on, they're welcome to shoot us a line, and we'll get you all set up. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, if I was any kind of a man, I would. But I'm not. So anyway. But it's good. I appreciate it. And we appreciate you being here.
Yeah, I thank you guys for both having me back. I enjoy speaking to you guys.
Yeah, it's always fun. Yeah. So, of course, you know, your new book is called Windwalker, or that's your latest book, High Cliff Guardians Epic Fantasy Series, Soul Forge Universe Book 3.
That's book 3 in the High Cliff Guardians. It's part of the greater Soul Forge universe. So the Soul Forge universe is a whole bunch of different trilogies.
I couldn't say that 10 times. I'd have to have a cocktail. Anyway, Richard H. Stevens, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Alan R. Warren and David North and Martino.
Thanks, Richard.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.